So, who are you guys?
So, I'm Sean Shapula, and this is Luis Vegas from Bungie.
Okay, what do you guys do at Bungie?
So, we're tools programmers, and one of the things that I do is I work on the distributed asset processing system, or the farm, as we like to call it.
Okay, and Luis, same team, or same...
I'm over here. I did tools for a while, I'm doing graphics now.
Graphics now, okay. So you guys gave a talk here at GDC. What was your talk?
The title of the talk was Life on the Bungie Farm, or fun things to do with 180 servers and 300 processors. And the talk was basically about our farm and our system that we have for processing assets that we use for Halo 3.
Okay, so how are you guys using this farm? Like, what's the reason you guys started doing this farm? How long is what's the history of the farm? When did you first start plowing the land, if you will?
So we have a lot of challenging problems that we need to solve, which is we have a lot of data, and we need to process that data in different ways. And if you process that data in a single machine, you end up having this huge time sink because you have basically a serial process that will halt production. So what we ended up doing is we created this farm with a lot of servers where we can process assets or do any type of kind of distributed jobs across multiple machines.
Okay, so what jobs and how big are this stuff? Like, why can't it run serially?
Well, for instance...
What's running on the farm?
So one of the biggest, workflow that we have that we run on the farm, the one that consumes... the most resources by far is our lightmap rendering farm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially, you can think of it as just a big distributed rendering system. And we have levels that, would take many, many, many hours to run if just on a single machine. And even when we distribute it across 100 machines or sometimes even more, it can take a considerable amount of time, 12 hours, 24 hours, sometimes even more. If you were to consider a job that would take 48 hours to run across 100 machines, and consider, how long that would take to run on a single machine, it just simply wouldn't be practical. You just couldn't do it.
Sure, sure. So you mentioned lightmap. What is a lightmap for somebody that's not familiar?
So basically, a light map is the way we pre-compute lighting on the level. If you look at a level, you have geometry across the level, and you have the sun, you have the sky, you have all these static light sources. So you can compute the shadows for those static light sources in two ways. You can do it in-game, where you can pre-compute them and save a lot of performance when you're at runtime. So what we chose to do is to do all this pre-computation of the shadows on the server side, so we don't have to do the runtime. The lightmaps encode that information about where the shadows are for the sky and the sun primarily.
Okay, so how do you break up a task to lightmap an entire level across multiple machines? Like, walk us through the process of submitting something to a level. Like, the designer submits a level, and what actually goes on?
So basically, they'll pick... of course, which level to run light maps on. And then there's a little bit of granularity as to which part of which level they want to light map, or they can just do the whole thing. And they'll basically just run a simple process where they can set a number of different options, such as, quality of the light maps. There's a number of different features that can be turned on and turned off to, turned on to increase the quality, turned off to make the job run faster. And once that is submitted to our server and basically in our system, the farm takes over completely. And the farm basically has a long workflow that's, multiple steps. And the farm says, okay, for this particular phase of this job that I'm running, I need to run, task X, Y, and Z. And for this particular part, I can distribute this piece of this job across X number of machines, and the server will send pieces of the job to the clients, and you know, we essentially just have a system where we can specify how big the chunk of work is, how many chunks of work there are for each step, and just assign each of those pieces off.
So how do you bring it all together? You had mentioned some of the stuff on how you're using SQL Server, like as sort of the brain and dumb clients. Why don't you walk through some of the architecture of how it actually works?
Sure. So we actually use a SQL Server for all of our message passing. So any time there's any communication between the client and the server, it's actually not those two machines that are talking directly to each other. All of that communication passes through a SQL database that's in the middle. So essentially, the server says, okay, I have this job that I want to send a piece of it to a client. So it puts together a message object and basically serializes that object out and writes it to a table in the database that can sort of be thought of as like a mailbox. So it says, you know, here's my message containing like this job request object, and I'm going to address it to machine, you know, blah, and you know, it says, okay, send it to machine blah, this is from the server, puts it in the database, and then that machine will check its mailbox and pick the message up and do all this processing. And then, you know, ultimately when the job is done, the same process will happen in reverse, where it'll create a message that it addresses to the server and puts it in the mailbox. It's picked up by the server at the end.
Okay, so when it's done its job, it actually does it, and then the server is the one that's, I guess, pulling the database to see the current state of how everything is and putting it together, if you will.
More or less. The server actually keeps track of the state that all of the jobs are in. So if you have, like, you know, binary build, three light map jobs and like a contact build, for instance. Each of those jobs will exist as rows in a particular table in the database, and there are essentially the state that each job is in is stored in the database in the particular row for that job.
So when you say state, what's actually stored in the database? Like, is it I have a model and the current processing on the model, or what's is it a blob table?
It's essentially the entire state that the job is in. So,
so it's the job state, not the actual thing the job is working on, if you will.
So it's sort of like
the metadata about the job.
Yeah,
The state of the workflow. You can think about it that way.
Okay.
So you can think about the server as a state machine that actually has no state. Only takes a piece of data, modifies it, and saves it out, but it doesn't remember anything else.
Okay.
The actual state that we're saving is the state of the workflow. So, you know, if the light mapper takes 12 steps, we know we're in step 10, and we know we send messages to server 1, 2, and 3, or client 1, 2, and 3.
Okay, cool. So you talked about some of the different things working on there. So light mapper was one. You guys are actually building the game itself through that. Is that
among other things, yeah.
Okay. So how'd that go, or how do you guys actually get it to configure what is, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of lines of code, if not millions, to work in parallel and distributed?
So we actually use Visual Studio on our build machines for doing all the code compilation. And we have about a dozen or so different configurations that we build. And in addition to that, we build both our game and all of our tools. So we have all these configurations, and we assign out each configuration to a specific machine.
Okay.
And additionally, all the builds that we do are incremental, and each configuration is always assigned to the same machine. So any time a build takes place on a particular machine, we're only building what's changed since the last build that occurred.
So it's not a full build, you get the incremental, and that way your perf is going to be a lot faster.
Yeah, so we try to keep the build times as low as possible, and incremental builds allow us to get builds through generally pretty fast.
Now, talk about some of the things for the plugin architecture. You mentioned it's extensible, so somebody could write their own plugin that would work across those 100 servers, 300 processors. Is that right? Like, how did you go about just using that as the as your architecture, and how's it actually built?
So you have two aspects. We have the server-side plugins and the client-side plugins. You can think of the client-side plugins kind of a dummy plugin or like a black box plugin, which is basically a plugin that takes input, does some processing, and then it spits out some output, and it sends the output back to the server. So those plugins are very, very simple. And examples of those plugins are send an email, for example, or compile this project setting for our solution, run this piece of the Lightmap job that we have here. The server side is a little bit more complex. So the server side becomes a full, as I said before, a full state machine. Mm-hmm. And it has to keep track of which state it's in, and it's a little bit more complex. And it has to also have an interface to tell the clients what to do.
Okay. And you guys said you chose C#. Why'd you choose C#? Because I figure Bungie's pretty well known to be a C or C++ shop.
So we found that, first of all, the amount of time that it takes to do something in C#, generally speaking, is much, much less than to do the exact same thing in C++. So the development time is much, much less. And there's a huge, huge amount of functionality that's built directly into .NET that we can take advantage of and not have to,
So what are some of the either classes like or things you're taking advantage of in the framework?
So a lot of our serialization code, there's a bunch of parsing that is just like, that's really, really tedious code to have to write yourself in C++. And it's just pretty much handled automatically by C#.
And on top of that, you have the rapid iteration as a developer, right? When you work in C++, you have these long compile times, these long read times. C#, you get all this stuff for free, basically. So you can be iterating the code very, very fast. And that's another advantage of using C# for us.
And now, are you guys doing anything with multi-threading on a specific box or anything to take advantage of multiple processors? Or is there asynchronous programming on a plugin, or is that on a per-plugin basis? Or is there something you guys get for free in this architecture? Or have you started looking at that?
So the threading is... We definitely do take advantage heavily of threading. All of our build machines are 8-way machines. And all of the machines on the farm have a minimum of 2 processors. So we definitely take advantage of threading as much as possible. It's kind of dependent on the type of job that we're running. So for instance, Visual Studio has a lot of threading support built into it. I know that in 2008, I think you can do threading per CPP. And in 2005, you can do building multiple projects in parallel on different threads. I think it may be an undocumented feature.
I'm sure we're charging extra for that, I'm sure. So some cool stuff. So you mentioned you guys are actually building your own tools, the tools themselves, and actually compiling those tools on that. So, and the tools you build themselves are obviously in C#. Is that now?
Right.
Now, did you guys have experience using C#, or did you literally kind of get the Sam's book, teach yourself in 30 minutes or whatever it was?
Yeah, I mean, prior to joining Bungie about 2 years ago, I checked out C#. I played around with it a little bit. Never actually done anything significant on a significant scale with it. So I was new coming to it, and it was super easy to pick up. It's similar enough to C++ in many ways, and a lot of it is just really intuitive. There's a lot of ways of taking advantage of .NET to your advantage, like, you know, basically ways of sort of massaging the runtime, the framework, to get the most performance that I mostly learned through experience and through reading various different things. But, I mean, as far as, like, just being able to jump in and start writing code, yeah, I was able to do that really, really quickly.
Cool. And you actually worked on the Visual Studio team from back in the day.
Yes, back in the day.
Okay, so I'm assuming that's where you got your first...
Yeah, when I joined, I had very little exposure to C#. I think it was some of the alpha stuff that Microsoft released at the time. But when I joined, like, all the stuff that we did was in C#, so it was very easy to pick up, very easy to work with.
So getting back to, I guess, one of the core reasons is this is effectively business critical to Bungie. I mean, you guys, like, do this stuff where...
Absolutely.
Everybody's waiting on you, and you said it was kind of like the thankless job. When it working, you know, nobody bothers you. But what's sort of the massive scale? Like, how many jobs have run on this? Like, how much processing? You mentioned some of the one computation of one light map, and how long it could possibly take for one machine.
Right. So this is something that I mentioned in the talk. Over the course of the development of Halo 3. This system has done over 50,000 jobs, and I think about 10,000 of those were light map jobs. And if you consider the fact that these jobs are typically taking a minimum of 2 hours, and in some cases can take as much as 48 hours, you know, and this is across a large number of machines, it's been pretty busy.
Cool.
It is very critical. It's certainly not the sexiest thing to work in game development, right? You know, you hear about shaders, you hear about physics, AI, but you barely ever hear about pipeline, right?
Sure.
But it is critical for any game development studio to have its own pipeline and to have good iteration times. And I think that's what the farm allows us to do and what makes us different.
Now, have you guys started looking at XNA at all, or looking at XNA or the XNA pipeline, or any of those specific tools, or either maybe just for your own tool usage, or building other additional tools to help devs? You know, the classic ones being Level Editor, Model Viewer, anything like that. Started looking at playing.
I think you've had some experience with XNA, so Luis might be able to.
I've done some personal projects with XNA. I love the API. The content pipeline is a little bit trickier in the sense that they give you something very good if you want to make kind of certain types of games. But it requires more work if you want to have your own pipeline. But it does give you the extensibility to override the default behavior. So. Having the assets being part of your, like, game build process is kind of a weird concept to us, because we have a big separation between building the code and building the assets.
So actually talk about that. So how does your design team, like, the developers are just working, the design team are just working on their individual assets, and how does it all kind of come together at one point? Is it, walk through, like, what the actual process is, because it sounds like they're not, like, everybody does their check-in on Friday.
Yeah, so the way it works is we have a big source tree or a big asset tree. Engineers just work with it. That's what they do. They take the assets for testing, they need to test specific features, but they mainly work on code. Designers, environment artists, they work on their own assets, and usually working on different assets. What they usually do is they get an enlistment and they sync all the latest assets, and they sync that to their Xbox and what we call our iteration mode, which is our tag build. And they can load the assets and they can change an asset and they will see it right away on the console. But there's a big separation between the code and the assets. When they modify their assets, they check them in, and whoever gets the latest code just gets the latest assets that other people have checked in.
So that people are still doing some compilation locally, which is, like, say, their assets?
Yeah, they do importing, they do certain operations. They work on their content packages, they work on 3D Max or Maya, and then they export that to an intermediate file format, and then they import that into the game. the final beta format, the intermediate beta format may not get checked in, and that's why other people get them. So there's some amount of compilation, but it's very lightweight. It's very, it's not time consuming at all.
And you guys had mentioned some of the things around continuous integration and daily builds. Do you guys want to talk about some of that stuff?
Sure. So continuous integration system is one in which you have a machine or set of machines that are just constantly building. It'll start a build, run a build, run any number of tasks after a build is finished. And then once it's done, it'll immediately start building again. It'll just get the latest version of all the source code and just keep building. What we have is a little bit different from that. We basically have a system where engineers can check in at any point, and once they want to have a build compiled, they'll go to a web page that we have set up and hit a button that basically initiates a build job. And we found that a lot of studios use continuous integration systems, but we found that our developers tend to prefer having that control of being able to specify exactly when they want to have a binary build.
But you still do nightly builds and then have the ad hoc, if you will, when a developer really wants to see what something's going on.
Yeah, typically speaking, the nightly builds are only for, we have an automated process set up. It basically will build our binaries and then use those binaries to build our content. And then it'll take the final build and send it off to a bunch of Xboxes. And the reason we do that is that we want to have the absolute latest build on all of the Xboxes with testers when they come in the morning, so that the morning shift of testers can come in, they have the latest build, they don't have to spend any time looking for the latest build and then copying it over to their Xbox, or in our case, we have an automated system for doing that copying, but they don't even have to deal with all that. It's just already on their boxes, and they can just start their test passes.
Okay. So walk us through the process of, a dev comes in, or somebody raises a bug to him. There's been a bug introduced in the code. What are the things that you guys have done to sort of help that developer easily find in, connect, see what's actually going on?
We don't write bugs.
So as theoretically.
In the worst case scenario. No. So we have different, I guess you can see the question in different directions. We have set up, we have used a lot of Microsoft technologies to improve our debugging pipeline. And that's also supported by our automated build system. So when we finish build, when a build finishes successfully, we take a snapshot of the symbols, we take a snapshot of the source code, and we post it to another server. We copy all the data to another server. We register the symbols with Symbol Server, and which is a Microsoft technology that kind of keeps track of symbols for different exits.
Sure.
And then we copy a full snapshot of the source code to another location. When we build a binary, we tell it right away, okay, if you ever need to look up for source code, we tell the linker, if you ever need to look up for source code, look on this server, on this folder.
Okay.
So by the time the build finishes, it's already set up in a way that the debugging experience should be seamless. So a developer gets assigned a bug, and somebody tells him, okay, Xbox 20 is having some problems. We need somebody to take a look at it. So the developer just opens Visual Studio, goes to the debugging tab and says, attach to Xbox, puts the name of the Xbox, and they're right at the location where the crash occurred. Is very, very seamless.
Awesome.
And the way that works with the Symbol Server is that Visual Studio automatically knows once you've set an option within Visual Studio that you do once, it automatically knows that if it's attaching to a particular binary, that it should check the Symbol Server to see if that particular binary has symbols that have been registered with the server. And if so, which is the case with all of the official builds that come off of the build site, Visual Studio will automatically grab a copy of the symbol files from the server, as well as all the source code that we copied up there. So we basically have symbols that just resolve automatically as soon as you attach, and the same exact version of the source code that was used to build those binaries that you can step through.
So do you guys do like debug or multiple types of releases? Like when I do a build, it's actually not one flavor; it's, you know, five flavors, if you will, or international versions, or anything like that. Or
the localization aspect, we push it to the asset, to the different assets.
Okay.
So the assets contain localization. As an engineer, I don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
In terms of flavors of builds, we have several types of builds. We have what we call the iteration build, which is the build that the artist gets and can actually push individual assets and see them on the screen as he's working on them. Mm-hmm. We also have a profile build, we have a release build, we have a debug build, we have a symbols build, which is actually a debug build. So we have a series of builds with kind of a huge difference in performance from one to another. They're kind of hierarchical. Mm-hmm. That we use for different purposes.
Yeah, so you mentioned some of the optimizations you guys have done for Lightmap to improve performance. Like, have you done any specific instrumentation in the code itself to find out, other than, say, frames per second on the side, to actually see how the code is performing? Or how do you go about seeing that and actually seeing what the bottlenecks are, if you will, for why something isn't rendering?
So the light maps have two aspects, one which is the runtime aspect and one which is the farm aspect. Mm-hmm. On the farm, we have some hooks where we keep track of the timing of every single event on the clients. Mm-hmm. So we know exactly how much each chunk is taken on each client. And that's all the farm. The farm keeps track of all the stuff. We've done a lot of stuff to optimize the light mapper so it runs faster on the farm. But those are very domain-specific optimizations, and it's C++ for basically, the light mapper is a glorified ray tracer, so all the ray tracing techniques that are out there apply to it.
Okay.
For the runtime performance of the game, we have several in-game tools, we have in-game instrumentation to determine how well the game is running.
Okay.
Cool.
All right, so anything else? You guys are putting your slides on Bungie.net,
yes,
is that right?
Bungie.net. Slides for not only our talk, but also for all of the talks at GDC this year, they'll all be available on Bungie.net.
Okay, perfect. All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.